She called it Harry Potter's produce because it was in the cupboard under the stairs. 2017, I was able to spend a month on Jeff Lawton's research farm.
Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast. My name's Cormac Harkin, and today we have Caleb Hoffman on the show. Welcome, Caleb.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So could you give us a quick, short introduction, please?
Yeah. So I'm Caleb Hoffman. I'm a permaculture professional from the Snowy Mountains region in Australia, originally from the States, but ended up in Australia with my lovely partner, who is Australian. I've been in and around, I've been permaculture adjacent and for about 7-8 years now, and I guess it's more than adjacent, it's more emergent, immersive. But that's a really brief introduction.
That's good enough. Somebody start. So we always ask the guests first question: when did you first hear about permaculture, and basically how did your journey start?
Yeah. So I reckon my introduction to permaculture more than likely would have been 2012, 2013. And quite interesting enough, my first dive into ecological design, or kind of that thought of integrating into our world ecological systems would actually be in John Todd and Nancy Jack Todd's book, From Eco-Cities to Living Machines. That was at least the first piece of literature that I was given, that came across, that was solely focused on ecological design. But my introduction to it came from a really close mate of mine, Martin, who, after kind of a series of talks that we had and a series of experience that we had, you know, largely talking about, hey, we've got some issues present with the way we're running the ship as a whole, society as a whole running this ship. And he had mentioned that one of his really close friends had been studying this, or, as you know, I told him about permaculture, and she was up in the Pacific Northwest and, you know, really deeply immersed in developing her own property. And he was talking about these fascinating things that she was talking about. And that was really kind of that started the catalyst that made me, you know, I heard some of the few key things that, from my understanding, were going to be possible solutions. And he was talking about all of these things in the same conversation, in the same sentence, you know, starting to really weave a lot of these things that we, you know, that were sounding a lot like great solutions, you know, that really fostered positive outcomes.
Right. And so from them initial conversations, how did that develop then? How did you go about educating yourself?
So a lot of it was, you know, the joys of YouTube, which is such a powerful tool when leveraged correctly, you know, whether that's the joy of kitty videos or whether that's the education of oneself, you know, it's quite powerful. So that was part of my informal education. But I would also start also reading as I could about it. Like I was saying, with John Todd's and Nancy Jack Todd's book, that was fundamental for me. Because a lot of what that book was essentially it wasn't as broad and as general as, say, the design manual is, but it was a very well explained, structured, and pointed kind of introduction into what an ecological machine is, what an ecological system can be to facilitate, you know, positive outcomes. You know, they, through their living machines, they were, you know, rectifying wastewater treatment, wastewater from, say, processing plants like Cargill and, you know, animal processing plants that just had obscene amounts of, you know, bacterial, bad anaerobic bacterial contents in their waste pools outside of their facilities. But through these living machines and through these structured and facilitated biological processes, they were able to take these, you know, cesspits on the brink of virology, and, you know, and able to, you know, put a little bit more oxygen in them and give them a, you know, put them through these different stages of bacterial processing, and then algae processing, and then aeration, and then another bacterial, and then no sun, and then maximum sun, and then, you know, throw them through these series of living systems as they flow through passively, and able to process these bad situations into a, you know, considerably good outcome. So that was really quite powerful for me. And past that theoretical learning of YouTube videos, you know, the classic Jeff Lawton rabbit hole, you know, onto this literary education. I also went, and at the time I was living at 6,200 feet in the Sierra Nevada mountains of Northern California, working as a ski bum and working in the ski industry, and you know, living high in the mountains. I built an aquaponic system that actually lived in a cupboard underneath stairs. And it was made out of 5 55-gallon drums, you know, one as a pump tank, one as a fish tank, and then one cut in half for grow beds. You know, very rudimentary, very rough. I think it would have cost me about $350, maybe $400. And that was kind of how I cut my teeth on, you know, or how I really started in on the ecological systems, you know, as I could facilitate it with, you know, 5.5 feet of snow on my front, you know, just outside my front door. And that was a really interesting learning curve, because it taught me that while we can build complicated machines to do these things, it's not the ideal situation, because what we're doing is we're bringing in complicatedness, which is quite fragile. You know, a water pump will only break, plastic will only degrade. You know, every aspect that we bring in that is of itself not earthen, stone, or a living system, is it will give up over time. And that's something that, foreshadowing later down in the road when I was able to sit with Jeff considerably, it's one of the things that I would always, aquaponics, is that it's not in the soil, it's not sustainable, it's not regenerative. To be sustainable, to be regenerative, you have to be in the soil. No amount of IV drips and expanded clay medium will grow, well, you know, will actually regenerate to the level that we need to actually pull ourselves back from the brink that we're on. So that was my threefold education there. And my partner, who's still my partner now, she called it Harry Potter's produce, because it was in the cupboard under the stairs. that's just always stuck. It's just that's always given me a giggle.
Right, so no more aquaponics now.
I do entertain the same concept slash principles, but just on a different scale, different medium. So I will quite happily pump water in regards to a lift pump for either aerating an aquaculture system, like a flat bottom pond that's, a meter and a half or so, that I'm using a pump, to keep fish and that ecology of that fish pond just a little bit happier, a little bit more oxygen rich, or pumping it through a simulated wetlands for, say, that same situation, or say a backyard pool, a natural pool sort of situation where you still are utilizing that same, leveraging that same ecological system where, there's going to be yabbies and small fishes that are going to be producing the ammonia and nitrites and nitrates. And that little pump's going to be putting it through a bit of a aquatic ecosystem that's able to use, able to process and cycle that nutrients. And just being okay that pump is not a forever thing. If we get 10 years out of it, great, we get 10 years out of it. If after a while, that natural pool is just going to filter itself off the plants on its banks, and by then everything's so well established, you're not worried about the pump.
So, have you any formal education then?
Yeah, so I have. I've had I was able to spend in 2017, I was able to spend a month on Jeff Lawton's research farm, the Permaculture Research Institute in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales, which was a really powerful experience to see a lot of these systems laid out in action and in progression, because you can see the last forest planted, you can see the 6-month-old ecosystem all the way up until 2017. You could see, the 16-year-old ecosystem at that time, and you could see it in stages, which was really quite powerful. And then also the paradigm shifting, the thing that is that a 2-week permaculture design course is, it's really powerful, to be able to sit there and have a lot of these, core principles and techniques laid out, especially in a way that Jeff's able to do it, because it's very well connected. And it's very cohesive in its design eye, is in its design element. So I found that really invaluable. Couldn't honestly put a price on that. I deeply valued that, and I knew at the end of that month that at some point I had to make it back onto the research farm. With any luck, if I could make it work for a full year. But that took a bit of time. I, after spending about six months in Australia just on a travel visa, me and my partner ended up doing, a bit more ski bumming. So we went to New Zealand for a season, and then we went back to Northern California for a season. By that time, my partner was truly well and out of visas for the States, so I ended up coming back into Australia on a working holiday visa, where after a little bit of rural work, which wasn't particularly pleasant, I was able to get onto Jeff's property in 2019. And I did 12 months in residence on the farm there. And at that point, I'd been studying on my own for about 5 years, I had taken a design course and, spent a bit of time in action on his farm. And the way that I had looked at it is, through essentially a self-guided PhD course of me just enamored and focused and driven on consuming as much information and developing the deepest understanding I could of what permaculture means as a design science. I was able to then do, I like to see, you know, I like to say my the PhD, after doing my quote unquote master's, I was able to kind of do and sit down and do my in residence PhD on the farm and spend that 1 year, that full cycle on the farm, hands-on learning what it actually means to develop, manage, and foster emergence within these sort of systems.
That a lot of designers would be very envious of getting 12 months on say tuna farm, and even for the 1 month, because I don't mind PDC online, and I know some people like to do multiple PDCs, but the only PDC I would do would be, the only way you'd get me to do a PDC is if you took me to Australia for Jeff's 2 week PDC. I'm still holding out for that. That'd be nice, but 12 months would be out of the question. But that must have been some experience for 12 months. Like, that's life changing.
It was by that point, I reckon all of my radical shifts, my radical life shifts had already been pretty well cemented, but what it was a further reinforcements into the fact that what I was learning to do and what I was interested in seeing was not just possible, but also beautiful. Also had the ability to, through its function, able to produce a form that was pleasant, if that makes sense. And that's something that you hear quite often, that that's what holds people back. Especially, we talking to the uninitiated and talking to the people who it's all white picket fences and shortcut lawns, being able to say that this, once you let it get past its teenage phase, looks beautiful. Once you can embrace the chaos and understand that there is actually a greater order that will emerge, that once you ride that out, it's the process is beautiful. The process has stunning form through its function. That's definitely something that really carried with that I really quite enjoyed about the farm, is that every aspect of it was, and maybe I'm just a bit partial, but it was quite beautiful. Definitely takes the people though. You can't do any of this without that basis of community. You need the hands. Permaculture, to some degree, is just replacing diesel with people. Like, you don't have to go run around with a tractor if you've just got a gang of five friends who are just down to make the thing work.
Yeah, that's a conversation for another day, maybe. So you come off the farm. I'm sure you're full of beans, full of excitement, ready, spread your wings. What was your next steps then after you did your PhD?
So after we were done, after I was done on that year on the farm, we came back down south to kind of southern New South Wales, where Kate lives. Kate and her parents were living at the time, and we actually ended up going straight from, it's actually quite funny because I went from northern New South Wales, which is tropical, subtropical, should I say, zone 11 or zone 12, and then within the same state of New South Wales, which is wild to think of, I went all the way down south. It's about a 19-hour drive all the way down south to the snowy mountains region, which is zone 8. You like where we are at 1050, about 1,050 meters is easily zone 7. You would quite often see -4, -6 degrees Celsius in the winter, subalpine. So a radical shift in everything, right? Radical shift from monsoonal to somewhat Mediterranean, radical shift from very, very, very much subtropical plant assemblages to, submontane, like very, blady everything, and trees that are just as, eucalyptuses that are just tiny, even though they've been here for 80 years, and just life is hard, semi-arid, cold climate. And we were in a rental for a couple months just in the local town while we were kind of looking for properties. So my partner Kate, her parents have supported us in this journey, and have allowed us to get onto a piece of land that's we're now developing as a research farm ourselves. So we moved on to this. It's 16 acres in 2020, late 2020, or sorry, mid 2020, March of 2020. March 2020? No, hear me out. March of 2021. So we've been on this property for about 2.5 years now. And this is this and our lovely 2-year-old has been our full-time job. other than, my design work, my consultation work. And then I'm also doing a bit of farm contracting work as well. So that's where we ended up after. That's where I ended up. We ended up after the year on Jeff's farm.
Tell us about the design and consultant work.
Yeah. So I've got a few little entities that I'm in the process of, creating and fostering. One of them is Contoured Land Services, which is a company which its main sector of that company is so far been the design and consultation. But I also do farm contracting where I've got, we've got a small tractor and we'll do slashing or pipe laying or, kind of rural infrastructure, a bit of civil works as well. But what my main focus has been on, design consulting and implementation of water harvesting infrastructure, because that's, of course, that's the lowest hanging fruit, the biggest lever of change that we can actually start pulling. So as of last week, I've actually finished phase one of the biggest design implementation that I've had in this area, which is a 40-acre property that's just up the hill from me. And we've been putting in water harvesting infrastructure. And we've also been helping to restructure a little bit of their catchment system for an existing dam. So it's been some really cool bits of integrative design. So taking existing infrastructure and saying, all right, how do we make this, say, dam that's on the wrong side of a spur ridge for the rest of the, you know, to the rest of the property, and therefore only has about an acre of catchment? How do we connect that back up to the rest of the property along the spur ridge, if we can, through the constraints of the fencing and the constraints of the property, to increase its catchment size? And that's actually phase two of the design. Today I'll be going by and taking a walkthrough with our machine operator, who's going to be bringing in a 14 ton machine, and I'm going to walk through my hopeful plan for this integrative water infrastructure for this dam. And hopefully he says, no issues, I can see how this will come together. You know, I think structurally, I think from my end, I will be able to dig this to a degree where we can actually get a swale all the way into the spillway of this dam and actually have it as a fully integrated system, where not only will it feed water to the dam, but once that dam is full, we can actually backflow that swale and spill the water back out onto one of the ridge lines that feeds the rest of the property. Because at the moment, that dam spills straight off onto a neighbor's property and on the backside of the spur ridge to the rest of their 40 acres. So with any luck, in one fell swoop, we'll be able to not only change the catchment size from an acre of this for this dam to, I think I want to say it's about 5 acres, 6 acres. But we'll also be able to do that kind of hydrological, cheating's not the right word.
Sleight of hand.
Yeah, sleight of hand. Yeah, that little bit of chiropractic adjustment that allows us to not just increase catchment size, but then also retain that water on property for later uses down the hill. So that'll be quite fun. We'll be implementing that phase two on Wednesday and Thursday. So that will be, I'm quite excited for that. That this will be my first bigger earthworks implementation. And I'm quite confident in the outcome of it. Even if the operator says, oh, we won't be able to catch that contour line in the way that you think we'll be able to, because we are coming up against some pretty serious design constraints as far as really getting close to a fence line where that already has a road down it. I mean, a pretty rough road, access path, but hoping to be able to actually drop the level of that access pass and take that access material down the road a little bit to repair the road and give it a crown. So that's not going to be going anywhere. But then by doing that, actually finding the right level we need to integrate into that dam on the same contour. So pretty tricky little bit of design because of all the limitations, but very rewarding if we can actually make it happen. And this sort of stuff is probably one of the most valuable parts about being on Zaytuna Farm and working with Jeff, and having the privilege of, you know, being there as an intern for a year means that I can just kind of hang around after I get, you know, the bare necessities done during, say, their earthworking course. So when he's got a digger out there and he's teaching people how to do these earthworks, I can just be in the background, you know, and I can ask a question here and there, and that's totally fine because, you know, I'm not paying for the course, but I'm paying, you know, I'm definitely paying in my time. So that's the current project that I'm on. Previous one to that was a bit smaller scale. It was a suburban size plot. in a town adjacent to us, and we put in a rain garden. So we put in a walking path that had essentially like a rock, a rock walking path that collects all the water that comes off of the roof structure, and everything that comes over the surface around the house all gets funneled into that rain garden, and then that rain garden flows down into a set of infiltration basins. So two infiltration basins, and then after that flows out onto the street. But then into that, of course, as you would know, that's just the outlet. That's the structure that allows you that allows everything else to emerge, that fosters that emergence. So then we planted in to that a food forest, a lot of the usual suspects for colder climates, hazels, blueberries, currants, raspberries, and then all your lovely stone fruits, your palms, fruits, and a majority of them were actually espaliering, or creating. This is a fun one. There's one bit, there's kind of this island that sits in between the infiltration basins. And we've planted quite closely, we've planted a grip of stone fruit surrounding each other. And what we'll do is we'll actually do kind of a circular trellising where instead of actually putting in like a hard espalier trellis, we'll actually start maintaining them and pleating them together as to create this, cylinder of stone fruit that actually eventually becomes just one continuous tree that we pleat and graft together in a few spots, and then kind of keep it quite small because they are planted quite close together, but be able to create. I mean, it's a bit of an aesthetic decision, which doesn't always produce the best outcomes in other regards, but because it's a smaller suburban plot, we're going to be managing all of the fruit trees to be, 2 meters max, 2.5 meters max in canopy size. Because of it being a harsher climate, semi-arid, subalpine, you have to kind of manage them back into a smaller form anyways for them to be productive and healthy. At least it helps. At least it helps.
So you have the design, the consultant, you've got your urban plot, your big plot. You also have a YouTube channel. Does that factor into your earnings, or is that just more of a sort of promotion for the business, or?
I don't know yet. I just know that so many aspects of this, and I've only really just started to do it now because I've gotten over the desire to have things perfectly edited and the desire to have everything, primo and polished. And what I've been doing is I've just been taking cell phone video, recording, walking through, talking through what I'm looking at, what we're doing, and then just straight uploading that. Because so many of these things, if I can articulate it in the moment that I'm looking at it, has I feel has really high value, even if it just later for me to be able to go back and say, oh, okay, so that was the intricacies of this water harvesting system, or this was my thoughts at that moment on how rotating the sheep on on the farm might work. But if I become wildly successful on YouTube and able to, fund my kids' education through that, amazing. But that's none of that's the goal. It's more just being able to, share a 5-minute clip to, my mate about a bit of the design work or implementation side, or,
And any plans for the future? What's your next target on the horizon? Is there anything for your homestead or the business, or?
Absolutely. As far as the research farm is as far as the research farm goes, definitely going to be stepping a lot more into the education side of it this summer. So we'll be running farm tours, and we'll also be running monthly courses as we can fit it in with the rest of it, where, we'll do a vermicomposting course that also goes over soil science and goes through, nutrient management from suburban scale all the way up to broadacre scale, and that's one of the courses that I was able to do last year, and it was just so fascinating, the array of people who came, because we had, one lady who was in an apartment in town, we had one lady who was on 5 acres just outside of town. We had one lady who was on 40 acres just a little bit further, and then we had a couple who were on, I want to say they were maybe 1400 acres, much further out of town. And being able to, in the process of that course, meet every single person at their scale, and then able to, detail not just the principles and fundamentals, but then also kind of go from the macro to the micro and go, like, oh yeah, if you're looking to be managing nutrients because the cost of superphosphate is scaring you, if you want to manage nutrients on this scale, you need to be looking, at IBC farms, IBC worm farms, or looking at composting, on a farm scale, where you're doing these things, mixing with your tractor, et cetera, And that was quite worthwhile. So I hope to be able to keep doing that, So I'll be doing another, like I said, I'll be doing another soil science course start of the summer, but then I'll also be doing permaculture earthworks, or water retention systems, and then, orchard work. Not just food forest specific, but also, being able to bring people into that realm from their own orchard to say, all right, so what does your orchard look like? How are you managing it? And saying, all right, so how can we possibly increase diversity? How can we possibly, get them back into a proper pruning regimen? How can we, same thing from the macro to the micro, being able to go from, principles, techniques and principles, all the way into practicals and maintenance. And that's, for, as far as the educational side, that'll be the main focus. As I can, I do hope to be able to put on a design course, a 2 week, a 72-hour course. At the moment, what I'm waiting for on that is my partner in crime to come over and co-teach it with me. He's a phenomenal designer, and he's actually would be an amazing guy to sit down with and chat. That's Sam Parker Davies. I'm not sure if you've come across him at all. So he's Jeff's right-hand man. And he's currently over in the Middle East between Iraq and Saudi Arabia, and Saudi and Jordan. And he's doing a lot of NGO work. And then he's also living on the Greening the Desert project. And I believe he'll be back at the start of the year. He's quite keen to come back down and visit our farm again. And when he does, we'll be teaching a design course. Definitely be teaching us a 2 week design course, and then possibly an earthworking course as well. Because I've got up the back of our place, I've got a few dam sites that it would be nice to get a dam in sooner than later.
Yeah, that sounds
Just
exciting. And but it sounds a bit too like you're very attracted to the mountains.
yeah.
So I'm sure you have a unique perspective on mountainous permaculture. But that would be great if you could make that connection with Sam. That would be great. We'd love to have him on. Caleb, thank you very much. It's been a really good conversation, and thanks for sharing what you're doing. And we'll put all your links in the description if anybody wants to check out Caleb's YouTube channel as well. We'll put that in the description. If you get value out of that, which I think we have, give us a like, a thumbs up, a subscribe, and all the other stuff. Give me a review on the podcast channels, please, if you could, so we can share these stories of designers and permaculture professionals and how they earn a living around the world and about their education. And as well, there'll be a link in the description for our PDC to Professional course, which is coming up soon in September, taking you from PDC graduate to doing professional designs, client communications, and other stuff as well. If you have that link, that link will be there as well. Caleb, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure sharing my story a bit. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And thanks again. Folks, we'll see you next week. Cheers.